On a Monday, we're talking about an adoption task force on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last year, 723 children were adopted in Wisconsin. About a quarter of these kids were adopted within 2 years after they were removed from their home. These numbers come from a Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau report earlier this year. House Speaker Robin Voss announced the creation of a state task force on adoption last month, and public hearings around the state begin soon. Have you gone through the adoption process? What made you want to adopt? And did you run into barriers along the way? We're at 800-642-1234. Oriana Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. That's a Milwaukee-based nonprofit resource and advocacy organization on adoption and foster care. Oriana, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me this morning.
So last month we saw the formation of the Speaker's Task Force on Adoption. What was your reaction to the creation of this bipartisan committee?
I see in the last couple of years, we have seen the legislature taking up issues related to children and families. So we had the speaker had a task force previously on foster care. I think this is an extension of some of the conversations that happened out of that task force. And we're always interested to hear concerns and where we can also be a support both to the legislature and to the public.
So the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families said there were 723 children adopted in the 2018 fiscal year last year. You know, compared to the number of kids who are waiting to be adopted, is that a good or bad success rate? What do we know about that number?
Well, what we know, and so, you know, when I look at what we know in Wisconsin is that a majority of our kids that enter our foster care system are reunified. They go back home. We know that 720, you know, it changes a little bit each year, is about 14 to 15% of all of those kids. So you have a bigger number of children that are going home. We still have children that are aging out of our foster care system, just around the 300 mark. But what I see improving significantly is that when I came into this work 14 years ago, those numbers were well over 400, sometimes closer to 500. So there is a lot of progress being made in that area.
Where do you see the most progress in your time looking and working so closely with adoptions?
You know, what I see is that the Department of Children and Families have put a lot of effort into working with across all systems to help us identify families for children, make connections for kids, look at where there are relatives that we may not have previously known about. Because what we want is we want children to grow up in a family situation through adulthood.
Speaker Voss had said that the idea for this committee came out of the work from a previous task force, as you mentioned, on foster care during the last legislative session, and, you know, that a large number of adoptions come through the foster care system. Can you talk about that relationship between adoptions and foster care?
So, you know, what we know is that when children enter foster care, again, like I said, the primary goal is reunification back with birth family and or finding a relative to care for that child. But when we can't, we don't want kids to be moving around more than necessary. So often what happens is that our first approach after when it can't be birth family or extended relatives is to talk with that foster family about, would you consider being the long-term forever family for this child, and helping them understand that process.
And in terms of being that forever family and helping them understand that process, do you find that once they understand what that looks like, that they are committed to it? Or does it take some perhaps time and maybe coaxing to get them there?
Well, I think that each individual situation is unique. We know that most families, most of those adoptions that are happening from foster care are with a foster family that a child or their siblings have been placed with. We want to be careful, and I don't mean to, when I talk about language of coaxing, you know, this is a really, really difficult situation in terms of kids who have been through a lot and their families who have been through a lot. So yes, we want people to know what they're walking into. And people typically do. They have made a commitment. Our foster families have made a commitment. They have put a lot of time, training, energy. They just want to know what their supports are going to be post-adoption often. And we work to help them understand what that is as well.
We're talking about a new adoption task force on the State Capitol Report. Oriana Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Wisconsin's adoption process? If you've adopted, did you run into barriers along the way? What would have made things easier? You can call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Oriana, what are you hearing from families you work with about the challenges that they run into when they try and adopt? What are those barriers like?
Well, I think our questions come in sort of a few themes. I mean, the question is always unique on any given day, but they have some themes around them. I think when you're talking about families who are just starting the process and want to learn about the different types of adoption, they want to understand things like timelines, expense, what is right for their family. And we work really hard to help provide that information for them. So, you know, one of the ways that people can get information is to go to one of our websites, wiadopt.org. And there is a lot of information on that website about all the different processes. We also encourage people to call us or email us. Again, through that website, there is an info email address, but families can also call toll-free at 1-800-762-8062. And we have staff who are on our phones each day and kind of help people think through those processes. I'm sorry, did you have another question?
Well, one of the things that this committee is going to be looking at is the termination of parental rights. Can you explain what that means?
Well, before a child is what would be deemed legally free for adoption, there has to be a termination of parental rights hearing. That means a relinquishment of both birth parents' rights, and that is a court process. I'm not going to speak to the nuances of the court processes because I'm not an attorney, but I do know that that is often one of those times where there is a lot of confusion and frustration that happens on all people's parts. But we have to remember that a parent's right is constitutional, and we want to make sure we do everything to protect that. I'm going to quote something from the National Council for Adoption in that adoption itself is not a right. What we are trying to do is make sure that children have safe, secure families for a lifetime.
We're talking with Oriana Carey. She is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the adoption process here in Wisconsin? If you've adopted, did you run into challenges along the way, and what made things easier? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the State Capitol Report in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the adoption process in Wisconsin as Assembly Speaker Robin Voss forms a bipartisan task force on adoption. Among the goals is to find ways to shorten the timeline for adoptions and reduce costs. Have you considered adopting but then changed your mind? Would anything reverse your decision to start the process? And what questions do you have about adoption in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Oriana Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, and she stays with us. Oriana, among the things the task force is looking at is trying to find ways to shorten the timeline for adoptions. Can you give us typically, what that timeline looks like? How long does the adoption process take here in Wisconsin?
Oh, and, that is one of those questions where there are a lot of variables, because remember what we just talked about is that termination of parental rights side of things. We can see things go as quickly as 6 to 9 months to 2 years and beyond, and that's because every situation is unique and different. When we are talking about adoption from the foster care system, remember that process that we talked about, and birth parents have the opportunity to work through with their child welfare agency and foster and adoptive family, work with them to help them and help them have their child reunified. When that process for a termination of parental rights hearing begins, again, we have to go through those hearing and those court processes. Once there is a termination of parental rights, it is 6 months to finalization at that point. In the private adoption world, there are a lot of variables, times for birth parents to have appropriate counseling. Obviously the 9 months that a woman is pregnant and making her plans, has a birth father been given appropriate notice, all those things that go into that. When families adopt from another country, again, there are a lot of processes that have to go in place. Some of the biggest piece that people have to do to begin with is they have to go through a licensing process. They have to have a home study, meaning somebody comes into their home, looks at their living situation, asks lots of intrusive questions because we want to make sure that children are going to be safe. And then in Wisconsin, families have to complete 25 hours of training. So when you put all of those things together, I'm not trying to be elusive about timelines, but there are things that we need people to complete, and then there are also nuances that happen in court processes.
Another question this task force is considering is the cost and how to reduce it. What do we know about the average adoption costs here in Wisconsin?
In private adoption, what we know is that things can range from $10,000 up to $30,000. We know that there are a lot of related costs involved, and what we do here at the Coalition is help people ask those questions of the adoption agency, ask those questions of attorneys. We also have resources for, there are entities out there like Gift for Adoption, for example, that gives grants to families, and there's various other ones on how to make that affordable. Adoption from foster care, however, those costs are, there is not cost associated necessarily, and if there are any, there would be a reimbursement process on the back end through our state system. So sometimes I think that is a misunderstanding that people have.
Oriana, I'm going to have you zoom out for just a moment and tell us about how Wisconsin compares to other states. Do our neighboring states face similar challenges when it comes to the adoption process and when you look at timelines?
Timelines vary across our country. You'll find various websites at any given day where somebody will rate one state as more friendly or the other. Sometimes we know that families here in Wisconsin will go out of state because they feel that the process will go faster. One of the things we talk a lot here and we want everyone to understand is that faster doesn't always mean better. We know that people get really frustrated and anxious. We understand that, but when we talk to and work with the post-adoptive families we do, and the families we've known and I've gotten to know over 14, 15 years, they're going to tell you that while that beginning front process was frustrating sometimes, not always, sometimes, the journey of parenting a child through adulthood that's been adopted has a lot more ups and downs, joys and challenges, you know, wonderful experiences that are going to take you long past that front end time. And so we ask people to be patient. We even have a tip sheet for people about things they can do while they wait, how they can help get themselves more information. Often when we host trainings or training events, we have pre-adoptive families that come and they want to learn more, and we think that's fabulous, and they get to talk to other adoptive families. So, you know, while I know that people can certainly go shop around and try to find quicker timelines, they might want to be cautious, and they might want to make sure they have all the information and that they're going to get all the post-adoption support they can.
We're talking about adoption here in Wisconsin as a new bipartisan task force on adoption is called together at the Capitol. Oriana Carey is CEO for the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, and she's expected to give testimony to this task force. What are your thoughts on the adoption process? Have you been through the process here in Wisconsin, and what was it like? What would you change? Join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Oriana, this bipartisan committee and you going before the committee, what is the most important thing you want to convey to these lawmakers?
We want to convey a children's first look at things. We want them to be able to have an opportunity to look at all the information in front of them and make sure that decisions that are being made are looked at without unintended consequences. The best adoption, post-adoption scenario is an open adoption scenario. It is where birth parents and adoptive parents, or minimally birth relatives, and that future adoptive families continue and maintain a connection. Because for an adoptee, those questions about where I came from, my family, all those things, those are lifelong. And we know that families that have access to the most information possible have the ability to give their children and their adult children that information that sometimes they're going to want in the future. And so we want to make sure that while people want to make changes or they hear, that we make sure that they're hearing a balanced approach from everybody, and that this isn't one or two different stories. There is always going to be a challenging story. There are going to be challenging stories, but we can tell you that we hear a lot of wonderful stories, and we know a lot of families who have been doing this for an extended period of time. Again, they have joys, they had challenges, and they got through the other side, and that's what kids need. Kids need what we call no matter what. Families that continue to grow, families that are flexible and will be flexible with them, families that see love as infinite and not finite.
With your tenure in this area, have you seen states change at all their approach to adoption over the years, or have the laws and the guidelines stayed pretty constant?
Well, I think that people are always trying to look at how we can do things better for children. And I think we are at a time in our history overall in child welfare where we are looking much more closely at having children remain with people that are known to that child. So whether that is a relative or a coach or a teacher or somebody who had a connection, ways that we can reduce sort of that traumatic experience sometimes when I'm going into a situation where I don't know someone.
Let's try to fit in a call here. Brianna joining us from Appleton. Hi, Brianna. We're short on time, but what would you like to say?
Yeah. Hi. So I've actually always thought adoption was cool. I'm in my late 20s. I've wanted to adopt since I was a kid. And I guess I was just curious, the next couple of years, as I think more and more about when I should have a child, should I start the process, you know, like soon before I'm maybe even ready to have a kid because it's going to take a while?
Great question.
Yeah, that is a question that will have a lot of pieces to it. So what I would say, just like I said earlier, Brianna, is get information. So you can go to one of our websites, wiadopt.org, and download those different information packets about the different types of adoption. Also, feel free to email us, call us, because I think, you know, your question has a lot of different layers to it, and I would want to have you be able to have enough time to talk to one of our specialists about all the different nuances and things for you to think about. But great question, and thanks for calling.
Orianna, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a great rest of your day.
Orianna Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. Coming up on the State Capitol Report, we're joined by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, taking your questions as lawmakers decide budget priorities and how to allocate money. Join in 800-642-1234 after this news update here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin lawmakers are passing bills between chambers and sending some to the governor's desk. And last week, the legislature's budget committee passed a transportation plan that would provide $484 million in new funding, relying in part on increases to title and registration fees. It's where we begin our conversation with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and you have a line at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about work so far in this session? What are your thoughts on transportation funding or on increasing money for nursing homes who have Medicaid patients? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Robin Voss is Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly. He's a Republican representing Racine County and the surrounding area in the southeast part of our state. Representative Voss, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on. Good morning, Kate.
So we saw the legislature's budget committee late last week voting to increase vehicle title fees by $95. We saw an increase to the registration fee. Why are higher fees the way to go among Republicans?
Well, as you know, Wisconsin has talked about transportation and trying to find a long-term fix for almost a decade. We know that Assembly Republicans have really led on the issue. We have talked about this topic. If you remember in the last budget, the budget was even held up through the summer as we tried to find a way to raise more revenue and reduce our bonding. And that's why I am so incredibly optimistic about what was done by the Joint Finance Committee last week, because it focuses on what we know is the long-term priority to make sure that we have for the good of our state. And that's to ensure that we have funding for transportation in a way that's sustainable. We don't want to keep going one budget at a time with a lot of borrowing, as we've seen over the course under, actually, frankly, Governor Doyle and Governor Walker.
So
the revenue that's being predicted will actually bring a fairly sizable increase for local road aids and for state highway projects.
Why did Republicans nix the governor's gas tax hike? Why not go that direction?
I actually support the gas tax increase. I have supported that for quite a while. But in the spirit of compromise, it's more important for us to find a revenue source than to stick out for just one kind. I do understand that the way that the process worked in the end, we are going to have a substantial increase in funding. We're going to have a 19% increase in state highway funding. We're going to have the lowest level of borrowing since 2003. And we're going to have actually triple the spending that we do on the local road improvement program, which is the largest since 1998. So if you look at the idea of doing the title fee increases, it's a fee that only hits you when you sell or buy a car. So for most people, that's not more than once every 5 years. So it's actually going to be less expensive for a Wisconsin driver than it would be if we raise the gas tax. So I think it's a reasonable compromise. It's certainly one that has the support of a legislature, and I hope it'll get the support of the governor.
Well, let's hear Milwaukee Assembly Democrat Evan Goyke, what he had to say about increasing title fees.
Any car, when you buy it, the price just went up $95, whether it's a nice car or a not-so-nice car. it will now cost you $164.50 to buy a car in the state of Wisconsin.
So, Speaker Vaz, how would you respond to this, that Wisconsinites, regardless of being rich or poor, have to pay, you know, quite a bit more for their vehicle titles, and we're not capturing some other drivers who are moving through our state?
Well, let's just remember, if the gas tax went up by 10 cents a gallon and you drive the average number of miles with the average amount that a mile gets per, that car gets per mile a gallon, it would be lower for you to do this if you buy a car once every 5 years than it would be to raise the gas tax. So I understand why my friend from Milwaukee wants to demagogue and find every negative thing they can say. But I'm incredibly happy with the fact that for the first time in almost a generation, we have new revenues for transportation that mostly are being invested in fixing our local roads, our local bridges, our state highways. And we're doing it in a way that creates a long-term funding plan that's sustainable in our state.
One more question here on transportation. Republicans have commissioned a few studies on road funding since 2011. There's this new $2.5 million study approved last week to explore mileage-based fees. What do we know about there? What would this study satisfy?
If you remember in the last budget, this same study was included, but it was vetoed by Governor Walker. It allows us to explore what tolling or some sort of a vehicle miles traveled system would look like. As we see the future, we know that automakers are predicting that within 5 to 7 years, up to a third of the vehicles on the road could be hybrid or electric. So we certainly understand that gas tax is not the long-term funding structure if we're going to rely on what the experts in the industry tell us. So we've got to figure out a different way to pay for transportation. And that's why, you know, 35 states have adopted some form of tolling. States are looking at a vehicle miles traveled. It's not a single answer, but it's certainly exploring an opportunity for us to move away from gas taxes and toward more of a mileage-based system where people who drive a lot would pay more, people who drive a little would pay less.
Let's go to Ann in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Well, I am just so in support of gas tax. I don't understand why the Republicans are against that. These registration fees and title fees are just going to put more of a burden on Wisconsinites. A lot of communities have initiated wheel taxes, which is going to, you know, that's already added another $20 or $25 or $30 to a license registration fee. So now that's going to really up it for a lot of people. If a gas tax is initiated, it gets, you know, that money will be generated from people who are visiting the state. Why can't they help pick up the tab?
So Anne is talking about the layers of taxes when you look at local taxes as well.
I support raising the gas tax, but in a compromise, we were not able to accomplish that goal. So I think this is the second best option. I think it focuses on the idea that we're trying to have something that is reasonably priced. We're going to look at a mileage-based system. Of course, if you had tolling, we know that the interstates are the roads that most people from out of state use, and that obviously people who are in the trucking industry utilize interstates quite a bit as well, so we'd be able to capture a lot of that revenue going forward. But I think we should take a breath and realize that this is a huge win to not have us continue to borrow from our children to fix our roads. So we heard from people, Governor Evers keeps using his phrase, let's fix the damn roads. Here we are with a plan that actually does that and invests more in local road improvements, in local aid to governments to fix those potholes than even he did in his own budget. So I think it's a reasonable way to do it, and hopefully he'll sign the bill when it gets to him.
Talking with Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, a Republican lawmaker. Your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Speaker Voss, the Medicaid plan Republicans approved last week looks different than the governor's. It spends more than what Governor Evers wanted to increase nursing home reimbursement rates. And Republican Senator Alberta Darling underscores the problem.
There's nothing more threatening than thinking that the nursing home where your parents are is thinking about closing.
So why more money for Medicaid reimbursements to nursing homes and for paying personal care workers?
We know that Democrats, especially Governor Evers, has proposed to expand welfare as a way to put more people on government insurance. Our plan actually does not expand welfare, but instead takes the resources we already bring in through the income and sales tax and invests those in the priorities that I think all of us agree on. We increase nursing homes by 7%. We increase personal care workers who take care of those who are either home or in some sort of a facility by 9%. We increase funding for direct workforce investment initiatives. We increased funding for hospitals. We increased funding for family care. So we were able to make the investments that all of us agree are important in a way that was greater than the investment that Governor Evers proposed, and still at the same time not expand welfare to be able to pay for it. So I think, once again, reasonable compromise. It's a good idea for us to invest more in our health care system, but not do it by underfunding the exact people who we need to serve by putting more people on Badger Care, which, of course, we all know is just another form of welfare.
Would you consider taking the federal money for Medicaid and expanding Badger Care? Are you willing at all to consider it?
No.
Let's go to Rich now in Green Bay. Rich, hi.
Hello.
Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, I wanted to ask Speaker Voss. He's strongly opposed to the Medicaid expansion that was in the Evers budget, and seems like he's pretty much opposed to providing public health insurance to just about anybody. So I was wondering if he'd be willing to support some legislation that would say our state legislators would not have access to their publicly funded health insurance plan. State legislators have access to a really good health insurance plan, like Speaker Voss has access to. And why isn't that a form of welfare, as he likes to put? And would he be willing to give up access to publicly funded health insurance for legislators?
So, Rich, and you're looking at this hypothetically, Speaker Voss, you know, not all health care is created equal.
That is definitely true. Wisconsin does have a generous health insurance plan for its employees, and that's what we really want to focus on. We want people to be able to get their health insurance through one of two forms, either through their insurance that they get from their job, and we know the vast majority of Wisconsinites have employer-based health insurance. So if you're a prison guard or a professor at the university, of course you have insurance through the state, just like a state legislator would, because we are working and it's provided as a benefit through our insurance or through our employer. The second area would be making sure that people who are in poverty have access to health insurance through Badger Care. If you remember, we already cover everybody who's 100% or below of the federal poverty level. Republicans expanded that in our own Medicaid expansion under Governor Walker that didn't require us to increase the number of folks above the poverty level who are already on Obamacare. They are already on the exchange with 100% federal subsidies. And we know that the rate that they're paying per month is about 18 cents for a traditional family. So certainly they could be on a system that is funded by the federal government, paying private insurance rates, all funded by U.S. taxpayers, instead of a system that would require people to get state insurance where we pay below cost and the state of Wisconsin has the financial liability. So I think we have a perfect hybrid. There is no need to upset the apple cart. And I think that we also can show by the investments that we are making that we certainly can put money into the healthcare system without expanding welfare.
By rejecting Medicaid expansion, Governor Evers has said you shut the door on up to $1.6 billion in federal money for Wisconsin.
Well, that money would only be funded by the amount that private insurance premiums go up. Of course, there was a study that shows that the net increase in cost to the private sector, people who have employer-based insurance, would be several hundred million dollars. So I don't think it's wise for us to just pass along a hidden tax to the people who pay private insurance to be able to fund more people on welfare. That's why it's not going to happen.
We're getting up to speed on legislation and Republican budget priorities with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss as our guide. He stays with us. Want to hear from you. How do you think Republicans can work with Democrats in the legislature or with a Democratic governor? What do you want from your elected officials? 800-642-1234. We'll be back with more State Capitol Report in a moment on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on a Monday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're doing a roundup of developments in this legislative session as we watch Joint Finance Committee pushing toward its goal of finishing the budget. Trying to keep an eye on all of that activity with your insights as well. You have aligned to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Where should lawmakers increase their efforts? Is your top issue education or economic development, perhaps healthcare or transportation? Share your priorities at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. And Representative Robin Voss stays with us. Representative, Wisconsin's Attorney General Josh Call, he was on our program last Thursday, and we asked whether he'll defend Act 10, former Governor Walker's signature move that strips public employees of collective bargaining rights that's facing a challenge in the court. And the attorney general said he'll treat that law like any other. Let's listen.
Regardless of my personal view on an issue, the approach of the Department of Justice is to defend state law. And that's important for a couple reasons. One is, if the Department of Justice doesn't defend legislation, it's not as though the legislation then is just invalid. What happens instead is that somebody else would come in and defend the laws. I think that the state's lawyer should be the entity that's taking legal positions on behalf of the state.
Do you trust Wisconsin's Attorney General to defend Act 10?
I certainly hope he would do his job, but it's just been so disappointing since he started his new tenure that, first of all, he's withdrawn us from a lawsuit challenging our right to work. He's actually not defended the Planned Parenthood lawsuit, where we know we have pro-life bills that aren't being defended. So he certainly has not engendered a whole bunch of confidence in legislatures, Republican legislators, at least in Wisconsin. So I certainly believe that I want to understand his position and I want him to do his job. I just want to make sure that he actually does it and doesn't just say it, which is what seems to be occurring from his interview that you just played.
Well, his second point is that it's expensive to pay private lawyers to defend state laws, and Republican lawmakers hired lawyers to defend December's lame duck session. How would lawmakers justify that kind of spending?
Well, that's a prime example where, if what he said is true, that he would defend the laws that are passed by the legislature, but then the ones that he disagrees with, such as those taken up in the special session, he chooses not to defend. That requires the legislature, of course, to hire attorneys to defend the laws that were duly passed and signed by the governor. So it's a prime example of him, as unfortunately far too many politicians do, saying one thing and doing another. And that's what we're afraid of with this very partisan attorney general that we've elected.
Well, let's talk UW system here for a moment. The officials want more than $1 billion for campus building projects. And System President Ray Cross has said buildings are outmoded and technology is outdated. And last week, he called the lawmakers' UW funding proposal micromanaging and a missed opportunity. So where are you at with investing more in the UW system's capital budgets?
That's going to come up this week, as you mentioned, and I am supportive of many of the projects that they are bringing forward. I think that we have facilities that need to be updated, especially at our comprehensive campuses around the state. I think there's a good program in Eau Claire. There's another opportunity for us to do some projects at UW-Milwaukee and UW-Parkside. And I think we will show that we care about investing in the UW system, but we want to do it in a reasonable way. Of course, we know Governor Evers went on a spending spree with his plan funded by massive tax increases and one-time fund rates. So we don't want to do that. We want to make sure we have a sustainable way to do it. So our goal will be to find an appropriate level of funding, but in a way that can be paid for over the long term and not just dumped onto the backs of our kids.
We saw Joint Finance approve a fraction of the increase to the system's operating budget that the governor and the system wanted. Does that play any role in decisions about building projects, or they are two separate things in your mind?
They're really two separate things. And let's remember that the last budget that we passed, which the UW praised, had a funding increase of about $100 million. This funding increase is $93 million, and it actually continues the tuition freeze for two more years. So I understand that, you know, hyperbole is what gets attention of the media, but the difference is $7 million from where they said the budget was good last time to now where they say it's a kick in the shin. So I think there's a lot of exaggeration there, but, you know, time will tell. I think we'll be able to make our investments, and we'll do it in a way that's smart for the taxpayer.
Let's move on to Wisconsin's gerrymandering case. Let's go to Nate in Milwaukee, setting us up for that. Good morning, Nate.
Hi. Thank you very much. I was going to say one of the things that I would hope he considers re-including in the budget, like Evers did, was a commission for nonpartisan redistricting. It'd be good for the state because it would save money in the long run. We wouldn't have to deal with as many court cases. People would expect the people putting together the budget to truly represent them. And it, if done with the current people involved in the current court cases, could even make life less complicated for people because there won't be fights over whether or not folks should testify or not. So all in all, it could actually smooth things out.
Well, let's unpack what Nate is saying there. First of all, Governor Evers included a proposal in his budget to create that nonpartisan redistricting commission. That measure was removed by Joint Finance. What do you think about such a commission?
Well, let's first of all understand the assumption that no one in America is nonpartisan. Every single person has a bias toward one side or the other. They might hide it. They might do a good job at making sure people don't know what it is, but they all have a bias, which is why the very notion of a quote unquote nonpartisan redistricting commission is silly and impossible to achieve. We see that in other states where you have had a commission drawn plan, those also fall under the potential for lawsuits because people who are aggrieved on one side or the other still sue. So unfortunately, because we have vested way too much power in government, the outcome is incredibly important for people on every side of every topic. And that's why the ones who should draw the lines are the people who are directly responsible to be elected by the voters. In the last redistricting plan, it was adopted by the legislature, signed by the governor, sued in court, and they found that with a very minor tweak, it was constitutional. We know in the last election in 2018, Tammy Baldwin won 55% of the state vote, and she got 55% of the assembly districts because she actually ran an aggressive campaign all across the state. The fact is, Democrats do not appeal to rural voters because their agenda is a far left agenda. And that's why Governor Evers did not do as well as Tammy Baldwin did and did not carry the majority of the district. So it's really not focused on the idea of creating a different map. It's just that Democrats can't win because their agenda only focuses on very liberal, big city voters. And they don't have that connection to rural Wisconsin that they would if they would just go toward the center.
Speaker Voss, why do you think you shouldn't have to testify in Wisconsin's gerrymandering case?
Well, it's actually a long-held constitutional principle, and this was obviously done by Eric Holder just to make Republicans look bad. The very idea of legislative immunity is at the heart of what has occurred since our country was founded, and that's if you vote on a bill that you vote yes or no on drunk driving. They don't call you as a witness to say, why did you vote yes or no, or why did you author it? They look at what actually occurred in the legislative process. The outcome is what is under decision-making. It's not individual legislators testifying. So if we would have pierced that veil, it would have opened up legislators to being constantly sued on every single topic. And that's why, albeit a liberal court in Madison said something differently, the actual Court of Appeals in a unanimous verdict said that I should not have to testify, nor should any legislator, because it would be a dramatic change from the way that we have done business for almost two centuries.
But the electoral maps were drawn in secret by top Republican leaders back in 2011. Even GOP lawmakers were required to sign these non-disclosure agreements to being able to look at these maps. Isn't there something to say?
Well, once again, the Court of Appeals found that nothing more than a partisan group, which is trying to go through this process, was the ones who are pushing this issue. So I guess if the independent, nonpartisan judiciary said that I shouldn't have to testify, nor should any legislator. If we believe in a nonpartisan system, of course, we should just accept their verdict and say that they were right. So hopefully the people of Wisconsin who disagree with it will realize that that is an issue that is constitutional, that no one should ever be required as a legislator to testify and pierce the veil of allowing free and open debate in a democratic society.
Last few seconds with you. Flying a gay pride rainbow flag over the state capitol for the first time Friday drew backlash. What do you make of this order by the governor during Pride Month?
You know, Governor Evers has the right to do that. His basically his biggest accomplishment since he's been elected governor has been to withdraw from the Obamacare lawsuit and fly a gay pride flag. So, you know, that's his decision. It's not something I stay up at night worrying about. I've got more important things to focus on, ensuring that we have a good budget that pays for our schools and funds our roads and make sure we have good health care, a tuition freeze at the university, reasonable property taxes. Hopefully, in the next week, we'll see a very large income tax or property tax cut that we've been able to generate from the savings of not overspending in the budget. So that's the things that I'm focused on. I think most Wisconsinites too, but if you live in Madison, it seems to be the most important topic for the entire discussion. Well, I think for most of Wisconsin, it's not important.
Speaker Voss, thanks for joining us. That was Assembly Speaker Robin Voss here on the Ideas Network.